We bring you today a special guest, Renee Lassart. I've been friends with Renee for many, many, many years, and Renee is a really fantastic entrepreneur who has done already two very interesting innovative companies. And he's running Build.com today. He's also the founder of PayCycle, which was one of the earliest cloud payroll offerings catering to small businesses, and it got acquired by Intuit quite some a few years ago, actually. So Renee has had a lot of success already under his belt, and he's doing more important work with Build.com. Renee, I love what you do. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for having me, and congrats on all your success. It's great to think about our first conversation back in, I think, 2006 and 2007 when you were getting the first book out. So
That's great to see
the 1 by 1 million just getting stronger and stronger.
So, Renee, there is a lot of things that we want to cover in our 30 minutes today. You have done two companies, each focused on providing some form of financial services to small businesses. Your first startup was PayCycle, that's provided payroll services to businesses with 20 employees. Intuit acquired the company for $170 million. Tell us about Build.com. What does it do? Why is it unique and powerful?
Yeah, so Build.com is about dramatically simplifying how businesses pay and get paid. When you think about the number of checks out there, there's something like 21 billion checks in the U.S. alone last year. Of the 21 billion, 19 billion actually involve businesses. And you think about the cost of a check payment, the research that we have shows that that cost is somewhere around $65 a payment. So if you look at the 65 times the $19 billion, you get over $1.2 trillion in inefficiency in the economy. And I just hate inefficiency. I just, you know, if I have a chance to kind of work on it, whether it's at home or whether it's something that helps other people, that's what I like to help with. So at Build.com, we're about eliminating the inefficiency, and the way we do that is by automating the payables process and the receivables process. We automate workflow, we automate document management, so we eliminate paper, we eliminate checks, we create the ability for you to collaborate with your employees, your vendors, your customers, your accountants. We integrate with your banking systems, we integrate with your accounting systems, and we do it all so you can do that from the phone. So you can be anywhere in the world, and you can actually have your office in your back pocket. So you can have your filing cabinets, you can have your employees, their sticky notes, all the stuff that businesses use today to manage that process for paying. We take care of it and make it an automated solution.
And what is it about catering to small businesses and inefficiencies in particular in the small business market that fascinates you? You seem to have a real touch about that particular segment.
Yeah, for me, I grew up, I'm a fourth generation entrepreneur. So great-granddad had a couple of stores, general stores in Canada. My grandfather had seven businesses. My dad had five businesses he was involved with. So having grown up around small businesses and seeing how you have to wear multiple hats and, you know, everything from, you know, in the software space, writing code, you know, servicing that code, selling that, you know, code into the customer base. Wearing all those hats means that you're fragmented and that you need efficiency to get your job done. So I kind of identify with how when you can get rid of those mundane tasks, those tasks that actually hold you back, there's just an opportunity for you to reach a new height when it comes to managing your business. And so one of the things that I feel when I look around the solutions out, that are out there, the ones that are getting built, the ones that get trashed today, yeah, for the most part, consumers have been, you know, solutions have been built for consumers, but I have not seen a lot of solutions built for the SMB market. I've not seen a lot of solutions that have been targeted at businesses, you know, below the 100, maybe even the 200 employee range. So that leaves, you know, lots of enterprise solutions that have been built. And if you think about the, you know, the SaaS software solutions that are king, whether it's a SuccessFactors or a Salesforce or a NetSuite, all those solutions are really targeted enterprise. And, you know, then you think about, well, the small business, well, you know, Intuit's got a great solution there, but what about all this inefficiency? What's something new that can help businesses do their job better, not just, you know, not just get an incremental improvement, but a revolutionary improvement? And that's where you get into thinking about the back office, and how it's just full of paper, and there's just, you know, why not eliminate it and make it a lot simpler for businesses to manage. So I guess I had this affinity because of the environment I grew up in, and then I also worked at Intuit for a number of years, so I obviously understand, you know, the focus, the attention, and it's a really hard problem, and I like solving hard problems. You know, reaching the customer's heart, making it simple enough and efficient enough that the customers can solve it and serve themselves with the product is really important, and that's not something that most people know how to do. Most software companies don't take that path because it is so hard.
So for this particular segment, I think my next question is very relevant. You know, we are seeing a trend of SaaS-enabled business process outsourcing. Some call it do-it-for-me as opposed to DIY, do-it-yourself. When it comes to SaaS, it's, the assumption is that you buy the technology, but the small business or any business is going to do the actual work themselves on top of that technology platform. But this whole SaaS-enabled BPO versus or do-it-for-me trend means that whatever business process you want to take and farm it off to a service provider that fulfills the with the help of both technology as well as people who are trained in that business process. Would it be fair to say that both of your startups have been in this, what percentage of technology versus how much people participation is needed in delivering payroll or accounts payable, accounts receivable in this mode?
That's a great question, and actually I would say that has been a big part of my focus, and my attention has gone to and making it more efficient. One of the things you don't want to do as a business owner is I don't want to be removed from the process entirely. When I go to pay bills, when I go to, you know, manage the payroll, that's when I get connected to the business more so than when I am actually working and looking at a P&L. The P&L kind of is something that's historical that lets me see something as, you know, in the past. But the managing the actual bills, managing the payroll, that allows me to really think about my employees, my vendors, managing the invoices, my customers. And so I just think that when you have fully outsourced solutions, the do-it-for-you solution removes the entrepreneur away from their business, and I don't like that. I actually like staying connected to the business. And so at PayCycle, the term that we coined and used, which I think is similar to what you're talking about, is a do-it-with-you approach. So it's not necessarily do it for me. It's not necessarily do it yourself. It is we're going to do it with you. We're going to take out all those mundane tasks, all the sausage making that nobody likes to do. We're going to take all of that out and make it so that you get the finished product that's a lot easier to manage and work with. And so what we've seen is that businesses like that. They like staying connected to their back office, to their customers, to their vendors. They like staying connected to their employees by reviewing the payroll. They like that connection. But they don't like the grunt work of filing a tax return or actually printing a check and then signing a check. Yeah, they don't like that type of mundane stuff that can't be automated. So when we look at it, you know, if you automate everything like that, you know, we see from our customers and at Bill.com, we see that our customers say that they save on average 50 to 75% of the time. I was talking with a customer last week. And they were saying how they took a process that was normally taking them, you know, 3 to 4 hours a week to manage their payables and receivables down to less than 15 minutes. So that's a tremendous amount of time when you're an entrepreneur to get an extra basically 3.5 hours back out of your life. You know, that's a lot of time you can go work on either collecting those bills directly or building a new service or selling something else to the customer and having more time with your family. That's time, that's really valuable. And so what we find is that the technology, you know, can actually give back a tremendous amount of time and be a huge efficiency gain and not really involve more people. It's actually using less people because everything is being automated both for the business and for us. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question, Ramon?
Yes, and let me actually call this out to the audience. Those of you who are building, you know, SME-focused, especially small business-focused solutions, you know, under 100 or under 200 employee or customer-focused, business customers-focused solutions, maybe you want to take note of what Renee is saying about the do-it-with-me versus do-it-for-me or do-it-yourself. So these are you know, in some ways, three different subtle categories, three different subtle distinctions. And as you're designing your solution, you may want to keep these distinctions in mind in your product strategy evaluation and, you know, figuring out your game plan. So Renee, switching gears a bit, you did say that acquiring customers for this segment is really hard. And I remember that for PayCycle, your channel was the accountants who helped small businesses with their accounting. What is your strategy with Bill.com? What have you learned? What can we learn from you?
So at PayCycle and at Bill.com, we kind of had three core channels that we went after. We have a direct channel, and at PayCycle, that was easy because if you went to search engines in 2001, 2002, and typed in the word payroll, nobody was buying that keyword other than PayCycle. So we were getting lots of search traffic that drove a good part of our growth for many years. We also had the account channel where we would go to the accountant and develop a tool for the accountant to manage multiple client payrolls within their customer base. And then we also went to banks. And so we had a solution with Bank of America, which was the fastest growing payroll service in America the first 3 years that we had it before we sold into it. And we had other banks that were partners. So we had three channels there. We had the same kind of a channel approach at Bill.com. Our first approach, the direct, is a little bit harder here because there is no particular category that you can say buy and just have all this stuff come to you. But what we have found is that we are able to attract larger customers. I think you mentioned PayCycle has a focus of less than 20 employees. And we have a focus at Bill.com that's probably, if you work with NetSuite, Intact, Xero, or QuickBooks, we work with you. It doesn't matter what size of the business you are. So we have public companies that use us all the way down to, you know, self-employed companies that use us. And so that range means that the Google search and digital marketing does bring us, you know, a bunch of leads that we can then close. We also go through accountants. And, you know, for example, our largest accountant has over 350 customers on Bill.com. We have 40 of the top 100 accounting firms that are on Bill.com. And that enables us to, one, serve them so they can be more efficient with their time, which when they're in the bill payment process or the invoicing process for their customers, the bookkeeping, it takes a lot of time for them. And if we can give them tools that they can then go out and manage, you know, multiple clients with ease and make more money at it, then that's always a great thing. And then the last category would be partnerships. So we have partnerships with Bank of America, PNC, and another top 10 bank that we are going and selling, you know, the back end basically for their business solutions, their payment solutions for businesses. But we also have partnerships with Xero that we've announced, NetSuite that we've announced, Intuit that we've announced. So lots of great opportunities for us from a partnership perspective to integrate our solutions into where customers might be looking for a payment solution, whether it's the accounting software or in the bank solution. So a lot of great opportunities and different ways to attack the market.
You said so keyword search, PPC, or organic keyword search is still a source of leads, even for Bill.com. I'm just curious, what kinds of keywords are people looking for? Because this is not a category. Payroll, yeah. You know, people looking for payroll solutions, that made sense. But are people looking for bill payment solutions?
Well, if you type bill payment solution, one of the key problems with that is consumers are still looking for bill payment solution. While 50% of consumers have adopted some type of online bill payment solution, it's still much better known from a consumer perspective. So there's so much noise in there that we actually don't buy that word, that phrase, because it actually becomes problematic. We might buy the phrase business bill payment solution. We will buy actually more technical terms that, you know, businesses that are looking and working with the treasury services that banks have, you know, are used to the words such as ACH or, you know, electronic payments or something like that. So there's a number of, you know, phrases that we will buy. It tends to be that the more technical we are, the more successful it is, the more efficient it is. You know, we might buy the phrase, some accounting software and the bill payment solution together, right? So but it's hard just to buy bill payment because it is such a well-adopted consumer solution and it creates a lot of noise out there.
Great. So, again, to call out the lesson in that is, you know, you have to kind of be careful about what you're buying and don't buy things that are not going to convert, especially if you have a keyword that is broadly applicable to other segments, then you need to kind of figure out the long tail keywords that are more specific to your segment that will actually yield good conversion rates. Otherwise, you end up spending a lot of money on not very productive PPC campaigns. Okay. Once again, switching gears, what has been your financing strategy with Bill.com? What stage are you in now? Are you getting close to this, you know, unicorn billion-dollar valuation? And what has been your philosophy in selecting investors?
That's a great question. I think in the market right now, Silicon Valley, at least, as you know, it's kind of very excited, if you will, and there's lots of opportunity for entrepreneurs. And so advice that I typically give entrepreneurs when it comes to this is, you know, you got to pick the best investor for the long-term growth of the business, and you cannot pick this based on valuation. So I don't think about valuation. I make it sure that we're valued appropriately, but I don't make it the highest and most important criteria when I select an investor. So I've turned down higher valuations before, and I'm sure I will turn down higher valuations in the future because there wasn't an exact fit with the vision of the company. There wasn't an exact fit with how I wanted to kind of manage the company in alignment with the cultural values that I had that I built the company around. So those are all things that I think I kind of answered the second part of your question first, but those are all things that I think that are really important when you think about the taking money from anybody, whether it's an angel investor, a family, a friend, or a VC, or it's early stage or late stage or growth or whatever. And I would say, you know, for us, we are at the growth stage of the business where we're just continuing to grow and scaling that business. And we know the opportunity is there for millions of businesses to be on the Bill.com platform. And we have, you know, today we have over 600,000 members that use our network to pay, get paid across 15 million bills of $20 billion moving through the system. That's a tremendous amount of activity, and yet we know it's just a fraction, and literally it's a small fraction of the opportunity out there. And so you have to have investors understand that, you know, innovative solutions do take time, you know, and that there are things that happen overnight, but most businesses that are built in the Valley, they take time. It's hard work, it's execution, and, you know, it's kind of what you hear from every, you know, not that I'm a huge military strategist, but every military strategist say they take execution over strategy any day of the week. And so I think when you pull that back into your investors and what you're looking for in your investors, you want to have somebody who appreciates execution. You want to have somebody that appreciates how hard it is for you to build a business, how hard it is for the market to adopt, and it's going to be patient, and it's going to ask you great questions. And, you know, one of the things that I look for is the types of questions that a VC, an investor, asks me when they're putting money in. If they ask me questions that makes me think, then I want them. If they ask me questions that I think are annoying, then I don't want them. And you get those. You get, you know, people that don't take the time to really understand your business when you're looking for money and don't know what's important. If they can't grasp and grok, so to speak, what the most important factors are to drive your business during the investment analysis phase, chances are they're not going to be able to support you when you actually have some challenge 2 or 3 years down the line and you actually need a lot of smart people that I was able to help figure that out. So hopefully that answers your question, but I'd say, you know, don't, you know, go for a clean term sheet. I think that's something I learned a long time ago from one of my investors was that, you know, it's far more important to have a clean set of terms than to have a high valuation. And, you know, when you hear about all these unicorn valuations, and then I hear about some of the terms that some of the unicorns are taking, it is, you know, it's something that I want to do, and it's not something that I advise anybody to do because, in the end, for me, this is not about, you know, making the highest valuation in the short term. It's about making the biggest value impact with the business that I've started, and that if you make that big impact, you'll get the best return.
You know, my observation about the industry as it stands today in 2015 is that we have two kinds of entrepreneurs, and we have two kinds of investors. And in both categories, there's the builder, you know, the one that focuses hugely on both strategy and execution, but really is focused on building long-term value you know, value creation-oriented mental models. And then there's the contrasting set, which are the speculators. Both there are speculators both in the entrepreneur class and there are speculators in the investor class. So you kind of have to understand, as an entrepreneur, you have to understand what category are you in? Are you a business builder? Do you have the patience and the persistence and the interest in creating value over a very long-term horizon? Or are you a speculator? Are you trying to make money, essentially, you know, somehow or the other, preferably quick? And you accordingly should choose investors who align with your mental model as well. And if you are, and I've known Renee for a long time, so I know that he's a through and through business builder. Renee, your mental model has no speculative instincts in it, and which I admire greatly. So that's, you know, if you are of that category, and that, by the way, as I'll be very honest, I'm not trying to be, you know, unbiased or non-judgmental at all. I hate speculators. I hate speculative entrepreneurs, and I hate speculative investors. So I'm very much and you'll see the kinds of guests that I invite here are all people who are, you know, whom I admire, whose work I admire, whose value systems I admire, whose, you know, ability to stay with it, with complex problems and crack complex problems I admire. So the ethos of 1 million by 1 million is very much in the category of business building and staying with it for the long term. And as a result, the investors that we attract, the investors that we tend to work with most closely, also happen to be of that category of the business building types. So Renee, just, you know, in terms of metrics, how much money have you raised so far? How many rounds? And, you know, who are your investors? Just give us a little bit of the facts so people, you know, correlate with the philosophy with some numbers.
Yeah, so we've raised about $130 million. Some of that has been debt, but most of that's been equity. And we've had six rounds net financing now. And the investors, I didn't do an angel round because when I was starting the company, I had promised one of the investors that I have that I would deliver him a short overview of what I was doing by May 1st, 2006. I decided to leave the day-to-day at Baycycle in January 2006. I had a breakfast with him. So I promised him by May 1st I'd have a presentation, a short 7-10 page or something like that. And as I was sending that out on April 29th, I thought, you know, I'd send this to a few other investors that I worked with at Baycycle. So I sent it to everybody who had worked with at Baycycle. And one of the guys, Tom Blaisdell at DCM, you know, jumped on it. And the next day he called me, said, hey, can you come out of the office? And then the following day on Tuesday, said, hey, let's have dinner. And then he gave me a term sheet for $2 million. So I didn't have to do the angel round. So that became my Series A investor. I have. So Tom's a great guy at DCM. He backed me both at Baycycle. And here, David Hornick from August Capital, Brian Jacobs from Emergence Capital, Tom Mooney from Icon, Rory Driscoll from Scale Ventures, Steve Piocher from Napier Park Global, which is an East Coast firm, New York financial services focus, and then a guy named Mark Johnson from TTV in Atlanta, which focuses on financial services. Mark Johnson was the vice chairman and you know, earliest employee, I think, at CheckReit. Pete Kite is also an investor. He's the founder of CheckReit. So one of the things you're hearing as part of the strategy is when I get angel investors, if I do take angel investors, I try to take, you know, I'm fortunate that I can kind of say, can they also add value? When I was doing Paycycle, it went to all my family and friends, and you know, a lot of people, it was 1999, a lot of people wanted to kind of get in on the buzz that was happening in Silicon Valley. So it was easy to raise $25,000 here or there from, you know, maybe 30 or 40 people, and all of a sudden we had $1 million. And that was great. This particular funding, I was able to say, well, you know, is there somebody that's going to add a lot of value, whether it's Pete Kite or Mark Johnson or, you know, the founder of iPay, Dana, or, I mean, so I kind of been fortunate if you had that opportunity to kind of focus the angel investors to be folks that are in your space that can help. The alignment is actually a great alignment that helps me manage the company better and grow as an executive?
In general, I think when you're raising money from people who understand your space is going to be easier because the investors are also looking to invest in things that they do understand. So that's absolutely correct. And of course, if you have track record, then you get to pick and choose even more and you know, fine-tune that strategy further. So I know we have about 3 minutes of your time left, Renee, and I want to ask a question that is kind of about the small business opportunity. I'm very bullish about both SaaS and SaaS-enabled BPO, DIFM, and as you called it, Do It With Me, DIWM now. We'll add that to our vocabulary here. these kinds of business opportunities catering to the SMB market. Are there specific areas where you see entrepreneurial opportunities that are untapped within that general framework?
I think, I mean, the area that we're in, I think, is fairly interesting is, you know, not just improving a solution that people have today. So not just taking existing software and putting it into a cloud-based, you know, environment. It is saying, well, now that I have a cloud, now that I have a central database with a central user management system, essentially, right, a user experience system, now that I can centralize and customize the data that any particular user gets and the user experience that any particular user gets, what does that mean that I should go and build? What are the things and tools that businesses could help with? So I looked at the back office and said, tired of the paper-based, manual-driven process. It needs to be automated. There's lots of things like that. And I think the other lens that I would encourage people to look at is how does that, the mobile increase in the demand that's happening with mobile, how does that change your perspective? I think it's easy to think about, and actually it's interesting, I'm going to speak at I'm attending a CEO conference, and I was asked to kind of list my favorite app, you know, on the phone. And so, and they said, you can't choose Bill.com. So I went to the phone, and I looked at the hundreds of apps I had, and, you know, none of them were changing my life. They were, you know, useful. I mean, when I travel, definitely the passport really helped me, or Uber helped a lot, right? But it wasn't something I used every day. And I think there's a lot of stuff that businesses, you think about from a consumer standpoint, I could say, hey, you know, Facebook, Twitter, you know, Instagram, whatever it is that I'm connected to socially, all of that matters a lot to your social connections. How is that going to change for businesses? How is the mobile world going to change how businesses do business? And I think that is kind of, to your point, the business problem of outsourcing, to do it with you, to do it for me, to do it with me. That all of those things are ways that you can look at the market and see that this is just a tremendous opportunity. I think that combination, again, is it's the mobile platform with a customized user experience and a customized data set from a cloud-based platform. You combine all that, you'll come up with lots of solutions that nobody saw before that will just be game changers. And they will take time. I mean, like we talked about with building, they will take time to build. But it will be obvious that it's a game changer when you start playing with it. And your customers will tell you that. That's one of the things that I've had investors, my investors have asked me at times when we've had a quarter that didn't go as well, and they say, okay, well, how are you feeling? I'm like, you know what, I feel more bullish today than yesterday. And it's true every day of this business. There is something that makes me feel better about what we're doing, that we're closer to understanding how do we get to the millions of customers using this. How do we impact that, you know, that impact of $1 trillion in efficiency in the economy. And that's what you as an entrepreneur have to look for. You have to look for those data points to understand, am I, you know, am I selling myself something that I shouldn't be, or is there real factual enjoyment from the product and the customer service experience that you're delivering? And there's lots of options.
Very good. Thank you, Renee. We'll have you back sometime after, you know, you have more interesting things to share, I'm sure. But for the moment, we are at 8:30 a.m., and I know you have to run,
okay.
And we will continue.
Okay, thank you, Shimana. Take care. Okay, bye-bye.